My name is Gary Alley. This is March 11th, 2017. And we are at Narkees Street in Jerusalem. And we're looking at the triennial portion this morning of Exodus 27, starting in verse 20 through the end of chapter 28. I'm just going to open with a word of prayer. Lord, we ask you to guide us now and be with us in a powerful way and speak to us. In your name we ask this. Amen.
Amen.
So let's read Exodus 27:20. What we usually do is we have a few people read. I mean, usually everyone who wants to read a few verses, and we kind of go around the room. If you don't have to, but if you'd like to, you can. And maybe Jemma, you want to read the first couple verses there?
Command the Israelites to bring you clear oil of pressed olives for the light, so that the lamps may be kept burning. In the tent of meeting, outside the curtain that shields the Ark of the Covenant of Law, Aaron and his sons are to keep the lamps burning before the Lord from evening till morning. This is to be a lasting ordinance among the Israelites for generations to come.
And you, bring to your brother Aaron and his sons with him from among the Israelites, so that they may minister as my priests. Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar, Aaron's sons. You must make holy garments for your brother Aaron for glory and for beauty.
Tell all the skilled men to whom I have given wisdom in such matters that they are to make garments for Aaron for his consecration, so he may serve me as priest. These are the garments they are to make: a breastpiece, an ephod, a robe, a woolen tunic, a turban, and a sash. They are to make these sacred garments for your brother Aaron and his sons, so they may serve me as priest. Have them use gold and blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and fine linen.
Make the ephod of gold and of blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and a finely twisted linen. The work of a skilled craftsman. It is to have two shoulder pieces attached to two of its corners, so that it's fastened. Its skillfully woven waistband is to be like it. If one piece with a cut and made with gold and with blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, and finely twisted linen.
We have nine now?
Yes.
Okay. Take two onyx stones and write the names of the 12 sons of Israel on them. Six on one stone, six on the other. Write the names in order from the oldest son to the youngest. Are the names of the sons of Israel on these stones in the same way the person carves words and designs on the seal? Put gold around the stones to hold them on the holy vest. Then put the two stones on the two straps of the holy vest as reminders of the 12 sons of Israel. Aaron is to wear the names on his shoulders in the presence of the Lord as reminders of the sons of Israel. Make two gold pieces to hold the stones and two chains of pure gold. Twist them together like a rope. Attach the chains to the two gold pieces that hold the stones.
The fashion of breastpiece for making decisions. The work of skilled hands. Make it like the ephod, of gold, purple, and scarlet yarn, and finely twisted linen. It is to be square, a span long, and a split, and a span wide, and folded double. Then mount the four rows of precious stones upon it. Then mount four rows of precious stones on it. The first row shall be carnelian, chrysolite, and beryl. The second row shall be turquoise, lapis lazuli, and emerald.
In the third row, a tessent, an agate, and an amethyst. In the fourth row, a chrysolite, an onyx, and a jasper. Mounted in gold filigree settings, there are to be 12 stones, one for each of the names of the sons of Israel, each engraved like a seal with the name of the one of the 12 tribes. 22.
For the breastplate, make braided chains of pure gold like a rope. Make two gold rings for it and fasten them to the corners of the breastpiece. Fasten the two gold chains to the rings at the corners of the breastpiece, and the other ends of the chain to the two settings, attaching them to the shoulder pieces of the ephod at the front. Make two gold rings and attach them to the other two corners of the breastpiece on the inside edge next to the ephod.
And you shall make two rings of gold and attach them in front to the lower part of the two shoulder pieces of the ephod, at its seam above the skillfully woven band of the ephod. And they shall bind the breastpiece by its rings to the wings of the ephod with a lace of blue, so that it lie on the skillfully woven band of the ephod, so that the breastpiece shall not come loose. Whenever Aaron enters the holy place, he will bear the names of the sons of Israel over his heart on the breastpiece of decision as a continuing memorial before the Lord. Also put the Urim and the Tumim in the breastpiece so they may be over Aaron's heart whenever he enters the presence of the Lord. Thus, Aaron will always bear the means of making decisions for the Israelites over his heart before the Lord.
Make the road of the ephod entirely of blue cloth, with an opening for the head in its center. There shall be a woven edge like a collar around this opening, so that it will not tear. Make pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn around the hem of the robe, with gold bells between them. 34.
I thought we stopped at 28.
No.
No.
To the end of the chapter.
Oh, right. Where have we got to?
What verse? 34.
The gold bells and the pomegranates are to alternate round the hem of the robe. Aaron must wear it when he ministers. The sound of the bells will be heard when he enters the holy place before the Lord and when he comes out, so that he will not die. Make a plate of pure gold and engrave it on it as a seal, holy to the Lord. Fasten a blue cord to it and attach it to the turban. It's to be on the front of the turban. It will be on Aaron's forehead, and he will bear the guilt involved in the sacred gifts the Israelites consecrate, whatever their gifts may be. It will be on Aaron's forehead continually, so they will be acceptable to the Lord.
You are to weave the tunic of fine linen and make the turban of fine linen, and make the sash of the work of an embroiderer. For Aaron's sons, you are to make tunics, sashes, and headbands for glory and for beauty.
After you put these clothes on your brother Aaron and his sons, anoint and ordain them. Consecrate them so they may serve me as priests. Make linen undergarments as a covering for the body, reaching from the waist to the thigh. Aaron and his sons must wear them whenever they enter the tent of meeting or approach the altar to minister in the holy place, so that they will not incur guilt and die. This is to be a lasting ordinance for Aaron and his descendants.
Okay, great.
Amazing.
So, obviously this morning we're talking about what the priests wear. But I would like to point out, before we go into that, what's the very first verse we read of this section here? What's it? It's not talking about what the priests wear. It's talking about what?
Command the Israelites to bring clear oil.
Oil. And we know oil comes from which tree?
Olive
tree. So, and this, I believe, is connected to the menorot, but it says ma'or. So, anyways, it's interesting that this is the first verse, and let's just keep this in mind, that it's talking about this really pure oil, shemen zait. In Hebrew, it says shemen zait. So it's even very specific there. I don't know what your translations have in English.
Pressed olives.
Okay. So keep that in mind. And what do you have, Kevin?
Well, I can't tell if it's a vav. I guess it's a vav or a zayin, but it's shemen zayin and then vach.
Zach.
Zayin. Zach. So is that what is pressed or
like pure?
Pure.
Pure is probably the best choice.
And this is to do with the priests and Gethsemane. You're on a big track here.
Here we go. Let's get on the roller coaster.
Yeah.
So that's the end of chapter 27. And then it starts to talk in chapter 28 about Aaron's four sons. And we all know two of them don't make it out alive. In a few more chapters in number, Leviticus. But verse 2, what does it say in chapter 28, verse 2?
Make sacred garments for your brother Aaron to give him dignity and honor.
Okay, and is this verse repeated later in our reading?
Yes.
You remember? Where is it?
4.
Verse. It's at the very end. Verse 40. basically...
Make tunics, sashes, and headbands for Aaron's sons to give them dignity and honor.
So, in the Hebrew, it's kavod and tiferet. So that's another thing. So the priests are going, the sons of Aaron, the reason why they have these clothes, and this is a bigdei kadosh, like beged, is it's going to give them kavod and tiferet. So that's in verse 2 of the beginning of chapter 28, and verse 40 at the end of our chapter. So I also think that's kind of a nice... bookend, if you want to say, for the chapter. So what is the translation? Honor and glory? Or
dignity?
Dignity
and honor.
Yeah, I'll just stick with honor.
So clothes can be important.
They're very important, right? Start
glory and beauty.
John the Baptist was
glory and beauty.
Right. Glory and beauty. I mean, where did clothes first appear in the Bible?
In
the garden.
Adam and Eve.
Right, it's in the garden.
God has to kill an animal to cover their nakedness.
Right.
So it's the first sacrifice.
Because it says here in this chapter 28, they got to cover their nakedness, right?
Yeah.
It's important. And if you think back to the Garden of Eden, where else is the Garden of Eden mentioned in the prophets? Gan Eden. Go to Ezekiel 28. In verse 13.
28 or 38?
Ezekiel 28, verse 13. What's it say there?
You were in Eden, the garden of God, every precious stone adorned you, ruby, topaz.
Okay, stop it right there. Who are we talking about here, according to the prophet?
You were the model of perfection, son of Antioch.
King of
Tyre.
Okay, this is a city up in Lebanon, right, on the coast. And it says you were the what, of perfection? The model of perfection? Any other translations there? This is in verse 12.
Seal of perfection, yeah. Full of wisdom and perfect in beauty.
Yep. Okay.
But it says in 28, 1 or 2, in the pride of your heart you say, I'm God.
Right.
So the king of Tyre set himself up a bit.
Yep. Yep. Similar to Nebuchadnezzar, right? Daniel, in chapter 4. And it says, yet you are a man, you're not a god. And... also in verse 3 it says you are wiser than Daniel. Ezekiel 28, I'm just looking at verse 3 there. Yeah. But go back down to verse 13 again there. It says you were in the Garden of Eden, and then every precious stone was your covering, ruby, topaz, emerald. How many stones are there?
Should be 12.
Nine.
How many?
Nine.
Okay, so our Ezekiel translations here are based off of the Hebrew, the Masoretic text. There's another translation which was popular in ancient Judaism. Which one was that? The Septuagint,
yeah.
Right? The Greek translation that was used in the diaspora. And they have 12 stones there in the Greek. And what do you think those 12 stones are? What we've just been reading in Exodus. I mean, 9 of the Hebrew ones are also from Exodus as well, of the priestly.
And they represent the 12 tribes.
And there's the 12 tribes. So anyways, if anything, if you're reading Ezekiel 28, what are you thinking about when you read this?
Exodus 28.
Well, you think about Exodus 28, and Exodus 28 is about what? What's the context? The priest. And it's this, and what does the priest represent for Israel?
The representative before God.
It's this kind of relationship with God, this closeness, because only the priest can go into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur, It's the reason why, you know, he wears those bells on his fringes so that if he dies, they can pull him out. It's a very kind of sacred thing here. And so Ezekiel 28 is kind of painting this picture of someone that's very close to God in a priest-like way. And you probably even heard of, there's also like a, you know, Midrashim on how Adam was the first priest, right? It's set. Sorry?
As a component.
Exactly. Because when he sins and he's naked and then they put the fig leaves on, God, what does God do? He kills that animal and he makes a ketonet, which is, if we go back, so okay. Let's go back to Exodus 28, verse 1. Actually, verse 4, there's five things that are part of the Bigdei Kadosh, these holy garments. What are they?
The breastplate, the ephod, a robe, a woven tunic, a turban, and a sash.
Okay, a breastplate, a ephod.
Is that five or six?
Was there a robe next?
I've got a robe. Ephod, robe, woven tunic. I'm not sure what the difference is between a robe and a woven tunic. A turban and a sash.
Okay, turban and sash.
And what's an ephod?
No one knows. I will pass this around. You've probably seen pictures like this before, but this is an artistic rendering here. This is probably a ketonet, the white thing that we're talking about. And then this would be the high priest, at least in the Second Temple period, when they start calling it the high priest. And so this would be your turban. And we just read about that there's like, you know, holy is the Lord, or holiness to the Lord, is put on top right there on the forehead of the turban area. Then this would be the Choshen, this area where the breastplate, where the stones are going to be. The ephod, apparently, this is how they have it, is this blue thing. If you look, we just read it in Exodus 28. Anybody can find the verse? First.
I thought it was a post
verse six.
From Gideon or something.
What is it?
I thought it
was a... The ephod?
A sign.
Okay, yeah, we'll get to it in a
eight
second.
Eight is the ephod made with gold and with blue.
Well, yeah, that's in verse six?
Yes.
Eight with blue, purple, and scarlet on the finely twisted linen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, right. There's all those different threads or whatever. But verse 31, Exodus 28, verse 31. What does it say?
Make the robe of the ephod entirely of blue cloth, with an opening for the head in its center.
Okay, so this is why this artist has this blue thing on the outside. This would be following that verse 28.
It sounds a bit like, what do they call them in Mexico or something? A poncho type. You stick your head through it and it falls down.
Like the tunic, yeah. And then at the bottom, what's supposed to be at the bottom of
the bells
outfits?
And
the bells and the pomegranates.
Pomegranates.
So, if you look really close, you can see it. So, I'll just pass that around. You can check it out if you want.
When I was reading it, can I share something?
Okay.
When I was reading it during the week, I was really struck by Aaron's to bear the names on his shoulders. And the whole, I mean, if we think of ourselves, we have become priests of God now. And we are to wear the clothes of righteousness. And the whole of the Isaiah thing about he clothes you with garments of righteousness. And what is it to go into his presence? Because it's the priest who has this basically direct access with
relationship,
God.
Yeah.
Relationship with God. And that's now put on us.
Mm-hmm.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
And so all these clothes are sort of, they're symbolic. Do you remember the famous book which Aviva Tiller's husband wrote, Garments of Praise and Glory? Years and years and years and years and years ago, long before I understood anything, that every single item of clothing reflects the spiritual relationship, which I don't want to spiritualize, but at the same time, it's not just a pretty picture then.
Right.
That's all I'm really saying.
Yeah. Well, let's follow. Sorry, question?
I'm just going to say, no, question, that in that order that you have the ephod, in this holy vest,
In verse...
it's the one we read, 28:4.
Okay.
Because he must make the chest covering, a holy vest, an outer robe, a woven inner robe, a turban, and a cloth belt.
Right. So kind of like
so
the outer piece, then the next piece? Is that
so
what
except that the ephod, if it's in the same order,
mm-hmm.
they say it's a holy vest. So maybe
right.
the chest plate is a...
Well,
right.
No one knows what an ephod is, an ephod. And so often people just say ephod. So they've come up with holy vest. So, but no one knows, actually. I mean, there's all kinds of rabbinic interpretation. And, you know, it's great discussion over the years. But going back to Sheila's comment about the ephod, you were, go ahead.
Gideon, I just thought, wasn't it
yes.
outside his door and it became a stumbling block, but it sounded more like a sign. Like,
so, if you turn to Judges 8, verse 27, Judges 8, 27, real quick. Somebody want to read that?
Gideon made the gold into an ephod, which he placed in Ophrah, his town. All in Israel prostituted themselves by worshipping it there, and it became a snare to Gideon and his family.
So, it...
But it's linked. If you go back, it is linked with garments. Wait a minute. The weight of the gold rings he asked for came to 1,700 shekels, not counting the ornaments, the pendants, and the purple garments worn by the kings of the Midian... or the chains that were on their camels. Gideon made the gold into an ephod.
Yes. So the question is, what is it here? It doesn't really sound like something you can wear, right? All that gold, it would, it's too heavy.
It's the big day of the man.
Right.
Somehow put it together.
I mean, even like what Queen Elizabeth wears for England, like that crown is not so big, but...
It's very heavy.
But it's very heavy. So... So a lot of people think here an ephod is obviously connected to some type of holy worship, but maybe not necessarily this blue cloth thing that the priest would have worn. And if you think about the story of David, you remember when David, he would like fight over the ephod, he would like try to get it in, let's say like 1 Samuel 23 verse 9 and 1 Samuel 30 verse 7. He'll grab it from somewhere, like, and so it seems to be more than just kind of like a generic cloth that the priest would wear. Even though that's what it is, often it talks about when Saul had all the priests killed when he was upset with David, it said that all the ones who wore the ephod, like 40-something, were killed. So it's a symbol of that status being priestly, but it also seems to be, like in this case here with Gideon, that it's something specific regarding worship or communicating with the divine. Like where you get
About making jewelry. I mean, they take the gold from the Midianites. He takes this gold, whether they were wearing it or whatever, looks like they were wearing it, and he turns it into something. It doesn't really matter whether it's a pillar or a golden calf or whatever it happens to be, it becomes an object for worship.
Yes.
And it could just be a lump of gold or a crown or a bit of old shirt.
Or an idol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit like running around looking for bits of the cross or worshipping Peter's
yeah.
finger or something.
Yeah. You know, what's also funny is it's only for the priest, right? If you read throughout the Bible, it's only for the priest. But there is one person who wears it who's not a priest. One time, at least that we know of. It come back to you? The famous story?
It's not the shroud or tunic.
No. King David. Do you remember he danced before the Lord? That's in 1 Samuel 23, verse 9. No, 2 Samuel chapter 6.
Wearing an
ephod? Uh-huh. Oh, just go there real quick, because it's too good. 2 Samuel 6. He had a lot of chutzpah. Because other people are dying left and right when
yeah.
they touch the ark. And,
2 Samuel what?
2 Samuel 6, verse 14.
David, wearing a linen ephod, danced before the Lord with all his might. light.
Remember, they're bringing the Ark of the Covenant up to Jerusalem, and and so this is David's his thing. So it's quite shocking, actually. Now that I like was reading this, I was like, whoa.
And that he was dancing.
Yeah, right.
Does it say ha ephod or ephod?
I have it in English.
Let's see.
And before David, they don't talk much about dancing, and yet he's really honored for that. It seems, or Mikkel is punished for it.
Right, right.
At one point, he's dancing naked, isn't he?
But what I'm saying is, ephod is used throughout only for priests.
Yeah.
It's never used for any. It's not like a generic me'il, which is the robe, or ketonet, which is used for another things. Is there? So, anyways, I'm not an expert in this. I just found this morning. So, you know, you can go dig into it more and see if you can find some other interesting things about that. But that was kind of interesting. You know, David, God really does like David. So we've got this breastplate, which is Hoshen. This Hoshen is only used in connection to priest. So the Hoshen. Remember, the Hoshen is the thing that these stones are put upon in connection with the ephod. And then the third thing is a me'il, the robe, which that's kind of a generic word. Then the next thing was the ketonet, and it's tashbats. Let me just get it here. Tashbets. Ketonet tashbets. And no one knows what tashbets is. It only appears this one time in the Bible. And so what do your translations have? I have fitted tunic.
Woven tunic.
Woven tunic. Some people have braided.
What verse is it?
That is Exodus 28:4. So we're talking about number 4 here.
Modern Hebrew, it's a crossword puzzle.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Checkered, yeah.
Checkered,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a point here where it says something about the collar should be woven so it won't tear. So I wonder what other type of manufacturer would you have
that's
to make cloth that would not be woven.
Right, right. That's like one of those million questions that people have about this stuff, because it's not clear. But yeah.
Maybe it's how thick it is. Or if the weave goes a certain angle, you can't just, go like this.
Right.
You can just grab the cloth and rip it.
Yeah.
And we tend to think of a collar as what you're wearing. Whereas it actually could be just a sort of a reinforced top, like a super hem.
Yeah.
Couldn't it, Sharon?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. To stop it ripping. Because I don't think he's wearing a sort of guy's turned down collar here. No, he's wearing a reinforced thing around the top, a bit like you've got on your vest, the white thing you're wearing under the shirt. That's got a what could be a collar.
Is that
like that?
Cue from tearing from mourning.
I would say
that. You tear your sackcloth, right?
He's got a heavy breastplate.
That would be hard to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to ask what Jesus was wearing, the Shroud of Turin.
Oh,
well, that's just a cloth, right?
That's just a cloth.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I'm not.
The Shroud.
Tearing it in mourning is something quite different. That's quite different because you don't tear.
No, I understand, but if there's a reinforcement here as a. As a way of keeping you from tearing. I'm just curious if it's connected. If you're the priest and if you're a representative, I'm just curious if there's a connection between that and...
Well, if you mix that with the story of Aaron, who was not allowed to mourn his own sons.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
He's priest.
So you can't tear.
Right. That's what I'm wondering. If it's a reinforced portion of what you're wearing, which keeps you from tearing... Keeps you from mourning, keeps you from that grief.
Wow.
I'm wondering what the connection is as a priest.
Yeah. A lot of questions.
Well, because they're also not allowed to touch
There's a separation.
Yeah. And particularly from anything that's dead or looks like dead or feeds off of dead meat, that whole metaphor of death,
blood,
is separate from God, who is life.
So that makes sense that even your own... So if someone, if you're mourning the death of somebody, you're not even allowed to do that.
Right. I mean, you would have to take off your clothes and be out of your priest thing to do that.
But you're saying that Aaron was not allowed to mourn.
I was just thinking the instance where his two sons
He had already been
ceremonially cleaned and he was already set apart in the temple.
Right.
And so Moses said, you just...
So what is this word for the so-called collar? You had the
touch
word touch something.
Touch bets.
How do you spell it in Hebrew?
Tav shin bet tzadik. There you go. But we got to move on because we got to get to our point of the haftarah. Yeah. So the last two things I just want to mention are the turban and the sash, and they're always appear in connection to the priest, except in these two instances. So the turban, Ezekiel 21:26. You're welcome to look there if you'd like. Ezekiel 21:26. And it's kind of talking about a day of judgment here. This is what the sovereign Lord says. Tear off the turban. Take off the crown. Things must change. Exalt the lowly. Bring down the proud. And I just want to point out that there's a connection here with the king. So you've always heard about priest and king. And those are two offices that are always anointed. Even in this chapter of Exodus 28, we're reading about you're going to anoint the sons of Aaron. So there is a close relationship between a crown, the natara, and mitznefet, which is the turban, which is what we have for the priest.
This would imply that he has both on, the turban and the crown, right?
Or maybe he's talking to two different people in relationship. Like at Qumran, they talk about the Messiah. There's two Messiahs, and one's a priestly Messiah, a Messiah of Aaron, and a Messiah of Israel, which is considered the royal one. So you could read it that way too. I mean, but just something to find interesting. Then the other example, which is the word is avnet. Avnet is the word we have for sash. And that appears in Isaiah 22:21. And this is specifically talking about a person named Eliakim, son of Hilkiah. And it says, I will put your robe on him. And the word here is ketonet. So already you're starting to think, something priestly. I'll put your robe on him. I'll tie your belt around him. And that's avnet, so it could be, you could translate it sash, which is the same word we have for the priest in Exodus 28. And I will transfer your authority to him, and he will become a protector of the residents of Jerusalem. So again, it's interesting, you've got these similar words. They are the same words that are connected to what the priest is wearing, and it shows that authority, and it's being transferred to this person, Eliakim, to show that he's got authority with these certain accessories around his body. And then, you know, the famous verse of verse 22, I will place the key to the house of David on his shoulder. And when he opens the door, no one can close it. And when he closes the door, no one can open it. What's the idea of the shoulder? We've read it earlier this morning in Exodus 28. What's connected to the shoulder and the priest?
It's having the
remember it said that the stones, the hoshen, the ephod is going to hang from his shoulders, right? And the names of the tribes are on these stones, right? And it's going to hang there. And you think of, like, say Isaiah 9. If you go to Isaiah 9, handles Messiah. We all know from the Christmas season. says a child, Isaiah 9:6, a child has been born to us, a son has been given to us, he shoulders responsibilities. In Hebrew it's Isaiah 9:5, and in English it's Isaiah 9:6. What do your translations have there? I have he shoulders responsibility in the NET. Any other?
The government will be on his shoulders.
The government will be on his shoulders. Or the authority will be on his shoulders. So this sorry? Yeah.
And what about I take my yoke upon me, you? Because the yoke is this, for my burden is easy. I mean, a yoke, isn't it a thing that people have on their shoulders to carry water and whatever?
I mean, I guess it depends what you're talking about in the time of the Bible. Because in Africa, they use their heads.
Yeah, but when Yeshua is talking about it, it seems to me that it's traditionally, that's the way I've always thought of it, as having a great...
Right, master. Right. Like the oxen when they're pulling the plow.
Yeah.
Right.
Yoke is for animals.
Right, so I would think mainly animals, right, for the yoke and the shoulders. But that's what your point is, that...
I'm just pointing
your shoulders,
out this whole the shoulder takes responsibility.
Yes. The shoulders
and
carry
takes the weight of things. You know, it's our shoulders
carry.
That pack up when whatever.
So I just want to point out here, back in our section in Exodus 28, when it talks about these things, the ephod
are being carried by the shoulders.
Exactly.
And we've talked about how heavy they are.
Yes.
The Hoshen is heavy. It's
yes.
got all these stones, it's gold and all the rest of it. I mean, just to get dressed in all these clothes is, you know, especially in the
it's
heat, is no joke.
Yeah.
Has anybody seen the film Crown? It's the most fabulous. You've got it on Netflix in America. You should watch it. It's absolutely amazing.
Oh, the Crown. Yeah.
No, it's just, is it called the Crown or Crown? Anyway,
I think it's
whatever.
Called the Crown.
It's absolutely amazing. But in this room, you see the Queen Elizabeth getting dressed for the coronation and practicing wearing her crown and what the weight of it is.
So, yeah, that's this whole idea of authority goes with kings and queens, and again with the priest. And just it's not off subject, but in connection with these stones, we already mentioned Ezekiel 28 and the New Testament, they also appear, these 12 stones. Where are they?
Revelation.
If you were to look at Revelation 21, talks about New Jerusalem that's coming down from heaven to be on earth. And it says that the walls of that New Jerusalem, let's see, verse 19, Revelation 21, verse 19. It says, the foundations of the city's wall are decorated with every kind of precious stone. And it goes through, again, these 12 stones that we have from the breastplate. And what's the point, again, what's the point of the priest? What's the point of this breastplate? What is the priest supposed to be doing for Israel?
Representing
them before God. And in Revelation 21, what is the point of New Jerusalem? Why has it come down from heaven to earth?
It's adorned, bride, beautifully adorned.
Right, but, okay, so it says it's a bride. Who's the bride? The
church,
right? The followers, the believers. And what's also interesting is it says that there is no there's no sun in this new world, because it says the Lamb is the sun, right?
Right.
So it's very similar when you think about the priest and the stones, where the priest walks in and represents the people with God. And so in a sense, the writer of Revelation has also kind of taken this idea that the Lamb, you know, represents the bride, the New Jerusalem. And is that representative with God as well? So there's something powerful in that image.
because he is the high priest.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother discussion. But if you were to take...
Just go back to that sentence again. I haven't got it. The lamb, in the way the priest represents Israel before God.
Right.
The lamb represents, you said...
Is, like, plays the part of the priest. It's the son, you know, of New Jerusalem, of the New World.
But he's not wearing the breastplate anymore. It's part of the foundations.
Exactly. And that's where the believers live, in that New Jerusalem. Kind of a beautiful image. Okay, so I want to bring us to my point now. all of that was just adiaphora. Let's go to the Haftarah, which I've written up here. Hosea 14:7, Joel 1:14, Jeremiah 11:16. We'll go in that order, and then Jeremiah 15. So, let's start in Hosea 14:7. And that's Hebrew. So, in English, it's Hosea 14:6.
Oh, very good. I was completely...
What do we have there?
It's so, between the
go ahead.
Beginning of the sentence? Or
just 14:6.
Okay. His young shoots will grow. His splendor will be like an olive tree. His fragrance will be like the cedar of Lebanon.
Yeah, that's it. So, what do we think of here? Connections with Exodus, our section. Dig in deep to what we started with, the very first
we
verse.
We started with the olive oil. The olive tree.
Olive oil.
And the olive oil. He's talking here, I will be like the dew to Israel, that's the verse before, like the cedar of Lebanon.
Anyways, yeah, so the point is it's the olive tree, right? It's the olive oil. They both have zeit in this. Hosea 14:7 in the Hebrew and Hosea 14:6 in the English, which connects back to Exodus 27:20, which talks about that in this place where God is, the light is going to be having this olive oil burning. And so let's just go with that. We don't need to belabor that point.
It's interesting because it actually talks about, in the Exodus thing, it talks about the olive being the light, for the lights, for the men of God.
Right.
You've just been talking about Revelation, that Jesus is
right.
The light.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You can't
you could go
just play with the word. You've got to make the connection with the light too.
Sure, yeah. The other verse I want to highlight in Exodus 28 is... Exodus 28:41. I find this a very important part of our parasha. Exodus 28:41. Someone want to read that?
After you put these clothes on your brother Aaron and his sons, anoint and ordain them, consecrate them so they may serve me as priests.
Okay, so remember the focus are the clothes. So we get them all dressed up. Then what do? We anoint them. And you only anoint them with what?
Olive oil.
Olive oil. Right? And we know this throughout the Bible, that that's just what you do. So that's another connection that I kind of see here with Hosea 14:6 or 7, you know, describing them as this olive tree. And here it's talking about you're going to anoint them with this oil. Okay, so the next Haftarah, Joel 1:14. Someone down there would like to read it? Joel 1:14.
That's fine. Yeah.
Declare a holy fast. Call a sacred assembly. Summon the elders and all who live in the land to the house of the Lord your God and cry out to the Lord.
Okay. What's the connection to Exodus 28? I mean, there's always plenty of connections, but anything... in the Hebrew, it starts off Kadshu Tzom. A Tzom is a fast, and announce a holy fast is what I have, but it's actually kind of like saying consecrate a fast or make holy a fast. It's a verb. And going back to that verse in Exodus 28:41, right? It said we dress up, we get the priest dressed, we anoint them with oil. Then what do? We consecrate them, we fill their hand, is what it literally says in the Hebrew. And then it says, make them holy. Kadashta otam. So that's the same word that's used about the fast in Joel. Consecrate a fast or consecrate this priest. That's the connection I'm trying to make here.
But this being making holy is setting apart, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
It's not sticking a halo over their head.
That's right.
But I was wondering if there's another connection with the next bit of that same verse in Joel. It says, call a sacred assembly. So it's the job of the priest
to do that.
To do that.
That's right, yeah, right. Definitely. Yeah.
And that's what he's not just there, and he's there to represent people before God, and he's all dressed up with that symbolism, but the idea is to call.
He's supposed to lead the people into
their holiness. That's right. Like, to be a sacred assembly.
Yep.
Wow.
Definitely. So now let's go to Jeremiah 11:16. Just someone read that first verse.
The Lord called you a thriving olive tree, with fruit beautiful in form. But the roar of the mighty storm he will send on fire, and its branches will be broken.
So again, we get this olive tree image connecting back up, I think, to the Exodus 27:20. And he goes on to talk about basically that the people have been offering sacrifices to Baal, you know, not to God. They've been led astray. And I mean, maybe this is a euphemism talking about the priest. You remember in Zechariah? Zechariah has an image of two
lampstands
and also two olive trees.
Olive trees, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
And who are the two olive trees? Go to Zechariah. Let's see. I am having to dig it out right now.
Zechariah 4.
Thank you. Zechariah 4. It says, what do you see? I see a menorah. And there are also two olive trees beside it. One on
the
right.
These two who are anointed to serve the Lord of the earth. Last verse, verse 14. But I'm not sure that he names them.
Right, but the idea is that if you keep going through here, it talks about Joshua and Zerubbabel, I believe, that Joshua is the high priest and Zerubbabel is the ruler. But it's this idea again that olive trees can represent the priest and kings because they're anointed. See the connection? So anyway, so Zechariah like uses it very obviously, connecting them. So, and then go to Jeremiah 15, the last one, verse 15.
You understand, O Lord?
Yep.
Remember me and care for me, avenge me on my persecutors. Your long suffering, do not take me away. Think of how I suffer reproach for your sake.
So your first verse was, you understand me, is what you said? Lord, you understand me?
You understand, O Lord.
What other translations are there?
I've got, Lord, you understand. Remember me and care for me.
Okay, so remember me and care for me.
O Lord, you know.
Lord, you know. So this is where I want to end this morning. The word for remember is zachar, and it's used throughout the Bible when God, about remembering things. It's not just like, oh, I forgot my keys. I remember I put them over there. It's more than just remembering where you lost something, but it's remembering a covenant or a relationship that you have. That's really the meaning of it in most cases in the Bible. And If we go back, if you go back to Exodus 28, and the what is on the forehead of the priest? What's written there? Right. It says, holiness to the Lord. Kadosh. Right? Kadosh l'Adonai. Oh, wait. Kodesh. Kodesh l'Adonai. And it says, why are they doing this in Exodus 28:12? You know, why are we putting... why are we putting these stones here, and why are we putting these things on this priest? It's so that it will be a zikaron, a memorial, before the Lord, always, forever. And so when you look at Jeremiah 15:15, it's talking about, remember me. Remember, your name is called upon me. We just read that in Jeremiah 15. Your name is called upon me. So I feel like it's like an allusion back to this priest, because this priest is carrying God's name on his forehead. And so it's this idea. It's, you know, it's just like with the mezuzot and the tefillin, where you have God's name written on your doorways and... you know, the gates tied on your arms, all of that, that it, you remember, you have something tangible to remember this relationship, and also for God theoretically to remember you. So anyways, so this morning with the Haftarah, this is kind of where I see it all leading, is this, that this priest is this relationship. This priest represents this relationship between God and Israel, and that it was very significant. And we even saw this morning how it carries over into the New Testament and Revelation with the same idea, that those boundaries are still there. They're just understood differently through Jesus. So, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Welcome this morning.